Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Mailbag. That's the nothing personal word of the day. Today is Friday, April 26th. Mailbag is when we do a show for you. Yes, it's not live, but I'll be back live Monday, April 29th, this coming Monday. If anything really amazing happened at the draft last night, you can bet your bippy that we'll cover it on Nothing Personal, 8 a.m. sharp, Monday the 29th, which happens to be the day of my final show of this leg of the Nothing Personal Live with David Sampson tour. We'll be live in New York City at City Winery. Not many tickets left, I don't think, but go on the website, davidsampsonpodcast.com. There's a link. You can go to the City Winery website. We'll have more announcements of future dates because despite what Greg Cote or Levitard in his cynicism of narcissism says, the tour has been a smashing success. It has truly been. As a matter of fact, the first question in the mailbag is about the tour. Let me explain what these shows are. DavidSampsonPodcast.com, David P. Sampson on Twitter, David P. Sampson on Instagram, though not as easy. Ask me a question. During regular numbered episodes, we'll do a So You Want to Talk to Sampson segment based on the movie Half-Baked. And every once in a while, we'll do a full mailbag episode with questions that we could not get to that either I could answer privately or on the show. Let's start right now. Can you, before I say that, when you ask questions, hello, David. Hey, what's shaking? How you doing? Hello, David. I'll even take a hi, Dave. This one was just, can you please discuss the NPDS live tour? How does a tour come together? How do you choose where to go? Any plans on doing another tour? If so, where? Coco, one of the things that we've learned about our audience, and we do the studies, we've got the percentages. Sometimes during the show, I'll drop a, hey, you know what 4.69% of you are thinking. And we do that because we know the percentage of audience or, hey, we had a record this month or this week or this show, record downloads, record views. This audience, they're so loyal to us, Coco, giving us 50 minutes, watching us on DraftKings Network at 10 a.m. Eastern every single day. The grind that Coco does as a producer is unheard of. Unheard of to have a daily show with the staff that we have, where it's me and Matt Coco, assisted by Sarah. Coco and I have been doing this since October 2019. And what happened is that I was thinking to myself, what can I do to make more money? What can I do to get more fame? No. What can I do to get out of the house? No. What can I do to pay back all the loyalty that comes our way, while flexing muscles that I've always had and loved? I'm a performer. I used to run a baseball team. I used to work on Wall Street. I used to run a business. I've done a lot of things in my career. My new career, to me, is my favorite career. But I think I've said that every step of the way. Everything I've always done has always been my favorite thing because I am a true champion of the moment. And the moment right now, it's sort of like the WNBA moment with Caitlin Clark. We're having a moment here at Nothing Personal, and it's a great moment to have. And what's fun about it, speaking of which, Coco, how do we get mute buttons live. What do people do when you're doing a live show, a comedy show? Our show's sort of a comedy show. It's a live, nothing personal episode that we release. We're on tour. There's some funny bits about it. There's audience interaction. There's some good old heckling. And I just sit there and I don't move. You know, there's comedians who pace around. I sit in my chair because that's what I'm used to, which is ironic because I'm a pretty active person. But I sit there the entire hour and a half. The shows are an hour and a half when you see it on tour. The way the live tour came into being is I was asked by a promoter, would I have interest in taking Nothing Personal on a tour, going live? What would it entail? And I said, well, I don't even need John Henry's bus. I don't really need anything. Coke and I do it with a camera, a microphone, and the rundown, there's not even a prompter. Side note, and I've said this during the live shows, and I'll say it again in New York on Monday night, it is very bizarre when we show up in a city because we don't have a gaggle of people. It's sometimes just me. Sometimes just me and Coca, or me, Coca, and Sarah. That's what we were in Philadelphia. So this promoter who I know and I've known for many years calls me up. His name is Mark. And he said, hey, any interest in going live? I said, yes. I want to get this show on the road, literally and figuratively. What would be the way to do it? I asked. And he said, I'll be right back to you. He then goes out and he looks for venues. What promoters do is they try to match artists with venues. And what he asked me is, are you willing to start in smaller venues? I said, of course. I don't know how many tickets we'll sell. It could be 5 tickets. I explained to him that Nothing Personal, which he thought was a big show from the beginning, which is funny because it wasn't. It has become a big show over time. People being loyal and being used to the product we deliver and how we deliver it, the consistency of it. And he wanted to know, hey, you know, your ego, what do you think if you go to a room and there's 50 people? I said, 50 people? That'd be amazing. Because we're going to release the shows, number one. Why wouldn't we? Number two, how intimate is that? Going to different cities and talking about city-specific things? It's fantastic. All right, what do you need from me? I said, and he said, well, let me just see what the appetite is. 48 hours, 24 hours, 1 or 2 days, almost immediate. Shockingly, it's taken Metalark years to get Levitard on the road, but I digress. 1 or 2 days later, I'm trying to change that. Side note. 1 or 2 days later, I get a call. I said, hey, City Winery would like you to do a tour. And they've got places in Philadelphia and Atlanta and Boston and Nashville and Chicago and St. Louis and New York City. Because in New York, concrete jungle, what dreams are... And I said, well, what do you mean? Tell me what the terms would be. How would it work? He said, well, first you have to give me dates. I said, no problem. I have a schedule that's very easy. I do a show Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. I do Levitard once a week. I have a bunch of other radio and TV hits that I do, but I'm a traveling guy. I've got my camera that I travel with, which is really my computer, which needs to be updated and will be. And I carry around a little travel mic, much to the chagrin of everybody at Metalark. I'm quick and easy, out the door, boom. He said, all right, give me some dates. So I gave him dates. I told him, for example, I'm going to be in London attempting to run the marathon. You obviously know from the live shows I've done this week whether I completed the marathon. As I sit here today, not positive. Hopefully, I do. I'm not even sure I'll be able to sit for the Tuesday live show that I'm trying to do from Paris, or 4869 that I did from Paris. I gave him dates. One day later, comes back to me with an offer to go to 6 cities during the month of April, starting in Philly on April 2nd and ending in New York on April 29th, all dates that I could work into my schedule. And I said, okay, how does it work? He said, very easy. Here's the expenses that get paid. Any expenses you have over that are on you. Here's the amount of money you make per ticket, per night. All you have to do is say yes. 2 seconds later, we had a tour. Then the work got started. We started developing a logo, which I happen to have right here. Hold on, Coca. Here we go. This is the Nothing Personal Live with David Samson logo. Thank you very much, Angel. It's outstanding, along with the NPDS logo. Coca, side note, someone emailed me, and I didn't put it in the mailbag. Someone said, David, you're so particular. Do you know your logo's wrong? And I looked and I said, what do you mean? I said that to myself before reading the rest of the letter or email that he wrote or tweet or whatever he did. He said, you have N at second base. You have P at home plate. You have D at third and S at first. Shouldn't it be N at home plate and P at first and D at second and S at third? It's out of order. And I wrote back, no, you have it wrong. Do you not see the DPS, as in David Philip Samson? That's how it happened. Now, in theory, I could have put DPS and third, second, first, but then the N would be on the bottom, and that wouldn't work. At least I don't think it would. So we develop the logo. Then we develop merchandise, which is available on davidsamsonpodcast.com, a tour shirt. Then I call my travel agent. Yes, I use a travel agent. Strongly suggest it. All the schnooks are online at the airport rebooking with all the delays. All of the dolts are on hold with the airlines. And I get immediate change of plane, change of schedule, change of reservation with a travel agent. Then I go online. I search out City Winery. Then I look for hotels near City Winery. Then I book a hotel. I got flights, got a hotel. Everything's perfect, ready to go on tour. Until I realized, I got to do the show. That's when the stress came. I went on Amazon and I bought a mobile printer. I went, thanks to my daughter, Kira, I found a copy shop to make those cards, which I was going to go on stage, Coca, when we first started, with my iPad or computer, which is what I do, which has the rundown. And she said, David, no, do cards like you're doing a real show. Then I whipped out the makeup that I use when I act or when I'm on CBS. And I said, all right, now I'm really ready to go. I got the printer. I got the special paper. I got the bronzer, which I don't have on. Good. Now what? And then over time, I prepared rundowns with Coca on shows that are specific to each city. So in Nashville, talk about MLB expansion. In Boston, talk about the Celtics and the Red Sox. In Pittsburgh, talk about the Steelers and the Pirates. In New York, wait till Monday night in New York. It is going to be quite something. When you hear what I have to say, some stories about New York. That's how a tour comes together. That's how I chose where to go. It's City Wineries. And yes, we're going to keep going because, as I said, it's been working. So we're going to announce Chicago, St. Louis soon. I'm thinking about Miami and I'm thinking about Montreal, Coca. I talked about it on Levitard last week. And they were like, you can't go to Montreal. You're not allowed in Montreal. I said, of course I'm allowed in Montreal. I think it would be outstanding to do a English-based, but sprinkle in un petit peu de français aussi. Pourquoi pas? Ça peut marcher, n'est-ce pas? Oh, je ne sais pas. Ils le détestent. They hate you. No, they don't. Half the people don't even, Levitard said it on the show. Half the people don't even know I work for the Marlins. So we'll see what happens. What's great about our show, let me do that better, Coca. 4-8-69. So we'll see what happens. Announcements forthcoming. What's great about our show is that there is a never-ending fountain of subjects to cover. Truly remarkable. Every day somebody steps in it. Every day something happens that's worth talking about that you want to hear details about, that I can give you unique insight due to the career that I've had. tell you what's happening, what's not happening, give you a preview of some great sports business stories. You can't win this best baseball podcast and the best sports business podcast if you don't have interesting things to talk about every day. Someone said to me, David, what sports business stories interest you the most right now? Is it still the RSNs? So that question is a double-edged sword to me, and I didn't know whether to include it in the show, but I'm glad we did. Because what I would hope is that by doing the show every day, you would have an inkling what sports business stories interest me, because we talk about them. So I'm going to do what I can do because it's my show and my name. And I didn't even tell Coca. He hates when I do this. I'm changing the question. Hello, David. That wasn't even in it. Next question. Hello, David. What sports business stories interest you going forward? Will it still be the RSNs? Well, thanks for asking. Let's talk about the future. Let's bring out the crystal yellow dust ball right here. And let's put ourselves into July, August, September, October, November, December. Yes, I know my months. Chicken soup with rice. What are we going to be talking about? Let's start with what you thought, which is the RSNs. Is that a business story that still interests me? You bet your bippy it does. Because all the things that you've heard us talk about, what the White Sox are doing, what MLB is doing by taking the rights to the Diamondbacks and the Padres, repurposing them, the people thinking they should disseminate their games over the air now, it's a return to before the days of cable. We want to get our games to as many people as possible. Do you know the team that gets its games to the fewest people as possible? How about the Los Angeles Dodgers of Los Angeles? Their deal with their RSN is so amazing because A, their RSN won't go bankrupt because it's guaranteed by the bigger company. But more importantly, they don't care how many people get to watch the games because they cash the checks every month. The reason owners tell you they care about getting the games to as many people as possible is when they don't have a deal. And then they make a deal for under market value and they have to say, listen, our sole purpose here was in eliminating blackouts and taking care of you, the fans. It's such horse hockey that it makes me laugh. Their goal is to try to figure out how to replace the cable revenue that's gone. And believe me, Karen Carpenter, it's only just begun. The disruption in this industry, we're at the tip of the iceberg and half the thing is still below water. And that trickle-down thing that happens, trickling down to player payroll, oh yeah. What could possibly be a bigger story than that? I got one for you. Revenue. Not just broadcast revenue. Let's go global revenue. We've talked about international. We've talked about the leagues trying to get Europe, get Asia, get South America. Sponsorship, bringing the game to them. Whether that's with merch, whether that's with a promoter like our tour promoter who promotes the NFL international games or the MLB international games. The international part of these leagues is a growing part of their revenue base. But when I say global revenue, what I'm referring to are all the different pieces that teams, that leagues, that athletes, all the different ways that people cobble together a business. You may think that there's no similarity between a player and an organization, but there is. What a player does is they get a salary. That's their salary to play the game. And what they do is they supplement it with building their brand through a podcast, through sponsorship, through association, through commercials, association with other products, making guest appearances, doing cameos. All the things that players are doing is the business of the player. And there's different revenue streams in every business. Their athletic career, their playing career is a revenue stream that is not a long-term sustainable revenue stream. So what you see athletes do, some of the less popular ones, their alternate revenue stream is to go to dental school at night. Some of the bigger athletes, their revenue stream is to become a broadcaster. The Tom Brady, the Jason Kelce route. Sometimes you don't even have to be a great player to be a great broadcaster. Most times, actually. Other players are trying to take advantage during their playing career of all the abilities to sell products that they can because they know once they hang them up that their relevance will decrease. It's all about trying to maximize today with keeping an eye toward tomorrow. Sound familiar? It's what companies are doing. You don't want a company that has one revenue stream, one source of revenue, one product. Now, what you're going to say is, now that sounds interesting to me because there's plenty of companies that all they have is they sell burgers and they're just happy selling burgers. No, no, they're not. They're looking to both expand into more places and expand their offerings. Well, David, what about your favorite In-N-Out burger? I'm sure they're happy where they are. No, no. They're also trying to figure out where to open the next In-N-Out and what to do inside to get same store sales up. Every industry, every person, every asset class, everyone's doing the same thing. And the business story that interests me is as we are seeing social media, and it's still nascent, as we are trying to figure out how people are monetizing. Coca just told me a story. Coca, please remind me of that story. That people have like 75 million TikTok views and they're getting like $1,000. But if you have 75 million YouTube views, you can make a couple hundred thousand bucks. I think that's something like what you told me. That sort of situation is not sustainable. Because what people tend to do is more of what gets them paid. If there are TikTok influencers and TikTok is behind in what their rate is in compensation, then all of a sudden what teenagers are doing or what adults are doing who you think are getting rich making a living, when it turns out they're not, they're living at home, maybe as incels, whatever they're doing, it ain't great. There will be a natural switch over to platforms who figure out how to pay their content creators. Because the content creators will get to a point, hey, I won't do this for that price. Let me give you the example of me. Building up a media career, how do you do it? Anytime someone calls, will you come on the radio in San Diego? Yes. Will you come on the radio in Cincinnati? Of course. How about Arizona? In. No charge. Then as you get more experienced, your audience gets bigger, your brand gets bigger. Guess what you do? You charge. Guess what you do when your tour does well in a venue of 50 or 100 or 150 people? You go to a bigger venue and you charge more for your tickets. And then you go again and go again. It's like rising through the ranks in baseball. Single A to double A to triple A. What's major leagues? Major leagues is selling out the Garden. I'm not saying I'll ever be, who's ever a major leaguer? But you can make a damn good living selling out the Beacon. Everybody is figuring out how to allocate their resource, declining resource, that is time, in order to maximize their pay. That's a business story. And the reason I'm watching it is because it's evolving so much. It used to be so elementary. It was so easy. Not that it could be done easily, but it was so easy what the path was for teams to be worth more, to increase their ticket prices, to get more TV revenue, to get more F&B money. It was so easy for players or for people to understand that their salary was their entire money. All different now. That's the sports business story I'm watching. I got another one for you, Coca. Another sports business story that interests me. And we've talked about it a lot last week. We are merely, what are we? Today's April 26th. We are a little over 2 weeks away from the WNBA and the Indiana Fever the national TV debut. I've covered it on the show last week. However, the business story of the WNBA fascinates me to no end, and we're going to know way more in a year than we know today. Now, what we have is the dream, and the dream is good. Sell the dream. And I don't mean the team. Sell the dream. The WNBA is the sport of the moment. It's always easier to sell what you think you're going to be than to explain what you weren't. Because when you have to explain what you weren't, people tend to say, fair enough, but it is who you are. Therefore, your value to us is blank, X. I thought my value was Z. No, that was your projected value. Did you like that, Coca? I was going to say projection, and then I said projected. Do you know what the example is in baseball? Do you know how much you pay for projection with a player? The NFL draft, you're paying for projection, but when you get to free agency, it's a little different.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, David. Thanks for another great show today. I don't know what day that is, but thank you. My question is, does it make sense for the NFL and MLB teams and municipalities in Kansas City and Chicago to look at building one stadium for their city's teams? There's a lot of questions in here, Coca. Let me do that one first. Not allowed. NFL does not want baseball. Baseball does not want the NFL. So let me be quick. Now, do you think it makes financial sense? I've always told you it's absurd to have the Panthers in one arena in Broward, the Heat in one arena in Miami. Totally absurd to have multiple buildings. No economy of scale. No benefit to your community. But when you're mixing sports, NFL and baseball, no chance toilet pants. Do the finances work? Let's talk about that. I think what you're referring to is the fact that the Bears and the White Sox are both looking for a new ballpark, and the Chiefs and the Royals are. And what you may have read, and we covered on Nothing Personal, is that the Chiefs and the Royals were trying to get a sales tax extended, and it failed at the ballot box. They did a referendum, and it didn't work. And now the Chiefs are threatening relocation, which they're never going to do. The Royals have been quiet. The reality is they're going to work together and repurpose a deal where the fans, meaning the taxpayers, meaning the voters, don't get a vote. You are in the hands of Danielle Gallant. That's an inside joke. The Vegas person. People in Pittsburgh know what I'm talking about. Sorry, where were we? I just got distracted by the saying that. Oh, did the finances work? Oh, no, sorry. Back to the Chiefs. So it's two different teams. And the reason why you're asking this question is you think, well, this will be so much easier. Forget building in Arlington and in the South Loop. Forget building in Jackson County and also where Arrowhead is. Just combine it all. Do you know we shared with the Dolphins and the Dolphins hated us for it and we hated them for it? It's just impossible to schedule around. The players don't like playing on dirt because the football field would have dirt on it within the 20s. And that's the space between home and second, first and second, second and third. Now there's great technology. You can have turf. You can lift out a baseball field. You can roll it out, put it back in. The real problem is not the playing condition for the players. The real problem is what we can charge you to watch the players. The sight lines in an NFL stadium are totally different than in a baseball facility. And the better the sight line, the more money we can charge and the more money you'll pay. The closer you are to the field. In baseball, if you're in a football stadium, the seats generally are not good. Just think about the shape of it. The outfield seats are far away and they're high up and capacities are wrong. You don't want to play where there's closing and tarping the upper deck in an 80,000 seat stadium or 60,000 seats. You want suites that are right between the bases, but in football, those are sort of at the end zone. So that doesn't work. So there's nothing about it that works. You ask, can they figure out the revenue sharing for non-NFL or MLB events? You think Jerry Reinsdorf is going to sit with the owner of the Bears? They'll sit down. So listen, when we bring in Guns N' Roses or Bruce Springsteen and we make a couple million dollars, do you want to just split that 50-50? How about, should the partnership be 75-25? That's how you negotiate partnerships. I mean, no partnership is 50-50. That's crazy. No decisions can be made in a 50-50 partnership. Someone has to be in charge. Someone has to own more. What about someone who owned a football team and a baseball team? Are there any examples of that, Coca? Isn't that amazing? We've never covered that. I must be missing one. Is there an owner of a football team who also owns a baseball team in that particular city? I believe the answer is no, but I may be having a moment. There's no doubt about it. But when I look around, I'm picturing the owners' meetings that I went to for all those years. Okay, I'm picturing them right now. A Mensa convention, it's not. And I'm trying to think, are there multiple? I don't have it, Coca. I'm going to say no. So you have to sit down with someone else to negotiate. Is it doable? Of course. What about the economies of scale, you ask? Obviously, one ballpark's easier than two. One set of infrastructure, one set of ingress and egress. But the way we answer that in communities is we try to build the stadiums near each other. I will use the same power plant, the same utilities, the same piping. That's the great economy of scale. The same people who did the rebar at this facility can do the rebar at that facility. We can go to bid together as though construction would be happening at the same time, which never happens, that you're on the same timeline. And timelines are a huge part of the cost of a project because you can't have the plumber installing toilets when you don't have a bathroom piping yet. That's a drastic example, but a very true example, actually. When you build a ballpark, side note, not even part of your question. When you build a ballpark, as a matter of fact, Coca, it's part of the next question. That's funny. Let me read the next question and then answer both questions as part of each other. The next question was, no, hello, David. Are there things that you wish you would have paid more attention to during the building of your stadium? My true answer to that is no. At the time, I paid attention to exactly what needed to be paid attention to, making sure the building was built on budget and in time, making sure that the timeline, the order of operations, the financing, making sure everything was done, trying to get a baseball team ready to go. In hindsight, what changes would I have made? When you look at new ballparks, when they're 5 years in, 10 years in, 15 years in, of course changes happen because viewing and purchasing patterns change. So as an example, why would I ever put ticket windows at a ballpark? And we cut the ticket windows at Marlins Park 10 years ago in half from previous ballparks. Totally useless. It's all mobile right now. Suites. We cut the number of suites at Marlins Park. It turns out even that would be too many suites for any ballpark because people don't like the suite. They don't like dealing with 81 games, or in football, it's true, they don't even like dealing with 9 games. It's a total pain in the arse. More areas without seats that are more entertainment areas. We put a ton of those. Marlins Park, I do more. Guess what Marlins Park is doing? Putting more in. Ironically, don't need them, but just saying they may one day. In Colorado, they built this huge Coors Field because they've been playing at Mile High Stadium, drawing 70,000 people for the Rockies. They said, hey, we need Coors Field big. And then they said they need it bigger. And then they realized, my God, we suck. We need it smaller. It constantly evolves what your ballpark should be in the same way your home does. Isn't your home different when you have little kids versus when you have teenagers? Isn't your home different yet when the teenagers are out of the home? Don't you repurpose certain areas? I don't need to step on Legos in this room. I want a man cave. I don't know if I can say that anymore. Is it a person cave now? So your question about what would I pay attention to, what would I change? Of course, in the rearview mirror, like everything else in the world, always easier in hindsight. Of course it'd be easier to have one ballpark instead of two. Of course, if butterflies and unicorns existed, I'd be all in to everybody working together. I love that. Jerry Reinsdorf, I'm working with the Blackhawks. But, and now he's also going to work with the Bears. I'm sorry to say it. I really am. They don't like working with each other. You think the Heat and Dolphins like working together? Come on. They view it as competition. Are you from Toronto? Can they build it better today than the Sky Dome was for the Blue Jays and the Toronto Argonauts? I just wanted your take. I would assume you're from Toronto. I'm not sure anyone's ever emailed me, not from Toronto, about the Argonauts. The Sky Dome is something. Do you know what's terrible is when you build a new stadium and you feel like you have to build another one within 2 decades? But you have a lease for 4 decades and you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, what am I going to do? And then you just wait for the lease to end and you start threatening relocation and fighting about CapEx. Here's a little thing that I paid attention to that you may think I didn't. It's the CapEx fund. That's a fund of money that you put in every single year that you take out when you're making capital improvements. Imagine if you did that in your own home, how great that would be. A little CapEx fund. I want to redo the bathroom. I'm going to save a little shtupple every month from my paycheck. And then we'll add it up at the end of the year and we'll go to Disney World. Oh no, we'll redo our bathroom. That's what stadiums do. Except it's just new seats, new scoreboard, new boards for advertising, changing out different sections. And all you do is fight with the local authorities who own the building for property tax purposes about how that CapEx money's spent. The way Arizona's fighting the Diamondbacks, not the Coyotes. Everything is a fight, and it's always about money. What else would I have paid attention to? I guess I do have one more thing that I would have paid more attention to. I would have paid more attention, and the Wilpons did this great at Citi Field, and I just didn't pay attention to it. And this is the most selfish thing possible, but it's here you go. Access from the GM's office and the president's office and the owner's office into the clubhouse. At Citi Field, they have their own elevator, the owners, right down into the clubhouse. Totally missed that. And I toured a bunch of stadiums and I looked at a bunch of them. And I was just like, all right, no problem. I'll walk amongst the people, pretend I'm a man of the people. And I forgot that owners wouldn't want to do that and GMs wouldn't want to do that. And after bad losses, I wouldn't want to do that. Okay. Oh, I don't want to say that. I got a call yesterday, Coca, in real world yesterday, not on April 25th. You started saying okay a lot, and then all of a sudden you just stopped. Thank you for noticing. Coca told me to stop doing it, and I just did it again. It's like a verbal crutch, a transition. The way to transition is go from one topic to the next with a little pause. First time, long time. From a marketing perspective, what do the Olympics need to do to come back in vogue? When I was a kid in the 2000s, the Summer Olympic Games were appointment television. Now it feels like they just don't matter as much. Pandemic aside, Rio and London just didn't have the same cultural impact as Sydney, Athens, Beijing. So what are you looking for in terms of marketing to bring back the Paris Games this summer? Well, you've seen shows this week. I've come to you live from Paris. Hosting the Olympics used to be an absolute must for a country. It was like hosting the World Cup. It put you on the map. You would do anything you had to do with the IOC to host an Olympics. You just would do it smarter than people dealing with FIFA. The problem is, three things happened along the way. One, it turns out that all the infrastructure and all the building and facilities that you build to host the Olympics, that you tell your community, you tell your taxpayers, you tell your citizens, hey, we're going to use all these. These are all amazing that we have to do this. This is just mind-blowing, the improvements. Turns out the improvements that are required to host an Olympics don't really translate. It's like buying shoes when you're on a vacation and you come home and say, whoa, those looked way better on the island, or a hat or a shirt. It's called translate. Turns out that all the infrastructure required to host an Olympics, there's a lot of juice. And it turns out that the squeeze of prestige is quite a bit teenier than it used to be. Number two, the Cold War ended. That was a big one. Do you remember when the Olympics, back in the day, Cote, you wanted to crush those CCC peers. You would make fun of the East German judge for giving the US figure skater a 6.9 when it should have been an 8.3. You had visceral anger toward athletes from other countries. You wanted to kick their tuchus. It sort of changed. Cold War ended. Yeah, it's not even the Soviet Union. They're not even allowed to be in the Olympics anymore. I think they have to be unaffiliated, the athletes. I think they just wear, I don't know what they wear in their uniforms in Paris when they're from the Soviet Union because of what they did to Ukraine and what they're still doing to Ukraine. I guess they just wear their name and maybe the Olympic flag or a neutral flag. It used to be a thing that would be appointment television. Hey, we want to watch this. Number three, amateurism. Do you remember when the Dream Team in 1992 happened and it was NBA players and the excitement that everyone had? My God, we're seeing the best. The best of the best are going to the Olympics. It used to be that it was all about people not getting paid, people who had day jobs, people whose dream was to be an Olympic gymnast and then to get on a Wheaties box. The money's changed everything. Think about the U.S. Olympic team that's going to Paris for the NBA that was announced last week. Did you look at that team that may rival the 1992 team between LeBron and Steph and Durant? Kawhi is going to be named. You got yourself Bam Adebayo. He's there if you're a Miami person, which I think 10 to 12% of you are. Jason Tatum. It's a really good team. Don't you remember the days, though, when you hadn't heard of the wrestlers, you didn't know who the people were in water polo or gymnastics, and then it builds up. And these are people, you're like, I can do that. I want to be an Olympic athlete. Now people say, I want to grow up. I want to be a professional athlete. I want to get paid before I'm a professional athlete. I want to do a sport where I can get paid right now, today. And I don't want to be abused. There's another thing. What else has changed? So much stuff has changed. How about this one? Appointment viewing has disappeared. The WNBA draft, great. The Super Bowl, outstanding. Appointment viewing, like the MASH finale, like the Sopranos finale, which it turns out was not a finale. If you know, you know. Love you, Pablo. Appointment viewing. The Olympics were appointment viewing. You would stop in your tracks. You would make your plans around Olympic events. You are going to be home to watch. People don't do that anymore. And it's taken away the luster. It's taken away the excitement. So what exactly can you do about it? I have a thought, and here it goes. Ready? The way to create appointment viewing is to increase demand while decreasing supply. It's to own a part of the calendar and to be consistent about it, pandemic notwithstanding. Quickly, when I was growing up, side note, I could tell you what year every Olympics were. And I knew that Winter Olympics were every 4 years, Summer Olympics were every 4 years, and there were 2 years in between. Always. Every 2 years was a different Olympics. I've lost track. I knew where the Olympics were going to be. I knew the dates. I was watching commercials. I was watching the networks they were on. All we hear about the Paris Olympics are how bad the opening ceremonies may be and what the plan B may be if things on the Seine don't work out. We're hearing how bad it is to go to the Olympics because it's going to be an absolute nightmare with gouging left and gouging right for hotels and tickets. We're hearing about nothing but negatives. You want to know how to make something good? Promote good news. Promote athletes. Promote the product. Find a way. The only way to do it is to start. I'll be watching. David, you seem to like movies where characters have an alternate life. What would you do differently in your career or personal life? I wanted to end this show with this today. We got about 5 minutes left. I don't know who asked this question, and I'm scared, frankly, that it's one of my children. It could be, could even be my ex. You're interesting to note that I like movies where characters have an alternate life, and you're right about that. Whether it's Mr. Destiny, whether it's Click, any movie where people see their life and make a choice or don't make a choice. The impact that choices have, I'm paralyzed by that kind of stuff. I think about it every day. I think about it. What road, everything that I am today, everything I think, everything I say, everything I do, it's all based on the imprint. It's all based on the programming. Now, I grant you, it took a lot of years and hours of therapy for this, but everyone's born with a blank computer, a blank hard drive. And you get hardwired a lot like the movie Inside Out. And your hardwiring helps define how you look at situations, how you explain internally your inside voice, what's happening around you. So you can then figure out how to respond to what's happening around you. Some people respond through flight. Some people respond through fight. Some people respond through ostrich in the sand, head in the sand. My programming was one of, ironically, conflict. And my programming was, I want to avoid conflict at all costs. So naturally, I got into a world where it was, as a lawyer, conflict resolution, where it was a business where conflict was needed in order to get financing for a ballpark. I tended to choose things, sports media, where conflict is a daily occurrence. You think that? That's your take? You're a moron. Turns out that you can reprogram. So you're wondering what I would do differently. And you're thinking to yourself that it's got to be something big. You wouldn't want to be so disliked in Montreal and Miami, would you? The answer is no. I wouldn't do anything differently because all the failures I've had have led me to every success I've had. If you go back like the butterfly effect and you eliminate all the steps that you took to get to where you are, then you can't be where you are. You will be in a totally different place. Now, you may want to be in a different place, and the way to get to a different place is to start moving. How many of you are in a bad place and just say, oh, this is my lot. This is it. Can't do a thing about it. I'm toast. I'm cooked. Not the case. You can change your narrative today if you so choose. I had a Hebrew school teacher. Yes, I went to Hebrew school, got bar mitzvahed. Her name was Mrs. Finkel. I assume she's passed away now, but maybe not. Although to me, she was 90 when she had me. She may have been 30. Who would know? I was little tiny. And she always would say to me, because I used to get in trouble. Back then, you didn't get ADD or ADHD. You didn't get medicated. You just got kicked out of class. She'd always say to me, your behavior is unacceptable, but tomorrow's a brand new day. I love that so much. I got it tattooed on me. Not from Mrs. Finkel. I got it tattooed from Castaway. Tomorrow, the sun will rise. Who knows what the tide could bring? That's exactly how it is with your personal life. It's how it is with your business life. The majority of people will let tomorrow be today. You don't have to be that way. Tomorrow can be a brand new, totally different day. You want an alternate life? You don't need the movies. Make your own life the alternate life. Just start. It's like running a marathon. The first step's the hardest. It's like anything in life. The first step is the hardest. I have complete confidence in everything that I do. Yet some of it ends in failure. You go back and you learn. You think about your process. You either dismiss it as that's how it goes, or you know that you did something that you could maybe do better, improve yourself. There's one thing that I do that works. It's just business. I appreciate this mailbag. We'll be back on Monday live, April 29th. This is Nothing Personal.